tomorrow.
All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table this morning. It's so nice to have all of you here. Michelle, I want you to lock the screen door because today we got to keep them out. We got a lot of action going on in the big studio kitchen. Lock the screen door.
You think we're going to have intruders?
We're going to have intruders.
We invite them in to have coffee.
Yeah, but I know. But today we have so much, I tell you.
You don't want to share the goodies.
No, we have some good things happening today. And just lock the screen door. No time for intruders. Welcome, everybody. Again, thank you so much for choosing us today with all of the wonderful activities you may have. And you start your day with us. So I want to also welcome you, Michelle, for starting the day with me today.
It's my pleasure. Mm-hmm. Well, start the day, end the day, yeah. Middle of the day.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's right. I did buy you dinner last night. Didn't you? You went to a big lecture yesterday.
I did. It was very nice. Dr. Gary Anderson came in from Notre Dame.
Right.
And he spoke about charity. And it was very interesting, the thoughts of how charity worked in the 4th century and how sometimes we're a little less charitable than we should be, but it's interesting to see what the thoughts about charity were way back, beginning.
Did they mention anything about me?
No.
No, nothing about me, I see.
He did not mention your name. Mother Teresa, yes. John Fowles, no. I don't know.
And across the glass wall, of course, Dean Slam, our engineer, the Slam Man, I call him. He's the Slam Man over there.
Howdy, y'all.
What's going on over there? How was your big week? Huh?
Oh, I had a great weekend. We went over to Austin, Texas and caught a wedding.
Man, I tell you what, how's the weddings in Austin versus the weddings in Louisiana? When we talk about a wedding in Louisiana, we're talking about a hoedown. We're not talking about just some sitting around a table with some woman in the middle with a white dress. We're talking about some beer drinking and dancing. And I mean, we're talking about cutting up. And,
oh, this was cool. It was in a big old barn.
Oh, yep. Things are looking up. Things are looking
up. It's a solar-powered barn.
Oh, so they were a green family.
Yeah.
Huh? They were a green family. Huh? They were, huh? I'm all about it. In fact, I think about putting in a few solar panels on my barn.
On your barn.
Absolutely. Let me tell you something. I wanted to bring you a gift today. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, unfortunately, it was out of season. I was thinking about it because, you know, mm-hmm. you're the apple of my eye. You know that. Yeah, because in June and July, I go out on my trees. I have a couple apple trees outside. Mm-hmm. Pick apples, and I jar some apples, and I make some beautiful preserves with my apples. And today I couldn't bring you an apple, but I brought you this little jar of apples mm-hmm. in Calvados right here from mm-hmm. my tree.
Because which is very thoughtful. I don't think I realized you were our very own Louisiana Johnny Appleseed.
Well, of course I am. You know I love gardening. You mm-hmm. know I love fruit trees. You know I have an orchard mm-hmm. in my backyard. You know I have an orchard at White
Oak.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate this lovely gift. I can't wait to taste it. Sweet, tart, crisp. Depends on what kind of apples you grow. I think most Louisianans would agree that apples kind of an anomaly in our state.
I think people are surprised to find out that you can grow apples in Louisiana. Now, I have to admit, I don't have an orchard. I have two trees. I have an Anna tree, and I have the Ian Shimmer, the gold. Yeah, it's like the golden delicious. By the way, it's an Israeli apple, which you and I'll get to see because we have a big trip coming up to Israel.
Yes, we do.
Coming around the corner. So we'll probably eat some of those Ian Shimmer apples over there. But apples do grow well in Louisiana. They grow in those areas that are considered hardening areas where the temperature drops a little bit. We're going to talk about that. But like in places like Franklinton, Holden, there's a couple of orchards. Shreveport has a couple of orchards in Louisiana. But yeah, I do have two trees. I have an Anna tree, which is a beautiful red apple, just breaks the branches of the tree mm-hmm. in July. And then the Ian Shimmer comes right after the Anna apple, and it's, like I say, golden delicious. But we are not an apple state, that's for sure, because we need those cold temperatures. You know?
I'm making a notation on the calendar. So I'll know when the apple harvest is next year.
Well, it was my buddy Dan Gill, you know, over at LSU. You know, Dan, whenever anybody needs anything about gardening or orchards, you call Dan Gill at mm-hmm. LSU. And Dan reminded me the issues with apple growing in Louisiana is the wintertime and how many days we have under 45 degrees, which is what it takes to set apple flowers. So once you come to know that, apples like Anna and Granny Smith and Golden Dorset, Ian Shimmer, you know, they mm-hmm. need fewer chilling hours, as we call it. So I bought a couple of those trees. And today you have the fruits of my labor sitting mm-hmm. right in front mm-hmm. of you.
Yeah, I want you to know I appreciate this gift.
Yeah, well, I know you do.
But I can't help but to remember mm-hmm. that women have been duped by serpents in the garden before. I'm just saying.
Well, you always like to bring up Adam and Eve.
But you know, it wasn't really an apple. It was a fig.
Yeah, well, of course not.
It was a fig, but...
Well, why did you say it was an apple?
I think what happened, and I haven't fully researched this topic, but I do intend to. I think the confusion arose when Hugo van der Goes painted The Fall of Man in 1470. charity, because what he did was he depicted an apple tree in the Garden of Eden.
Why did he do that? He knew apples. He knew figs.
Well, he wasn't around with Adam and Eve either. So, you know.
Well, you make a good point. But from the beginning, apples definitely have been tainted with stories of love and pleasure and sensuality and temptation. It is a tempting fruit, so to speak, which is why you were probably at a lecture last night.
Well, actually, Dr. Anderson is an expert on Genesis, and believe me, I had my question ready.
I bet you did.
But since he wasn't speaking on Genesis, I wasn't sure it would be apropos.
Slammer says, first grade, she's always perplexed the teachers by having an unexpected question.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. She is that student in the front row that people like me, my little leather jacket sitting on the back row with a pencil kind of in my teeth, you know, being facetious at everything
being
the teacher
cool.
said. Yeah, being cool. Cool. She's the girl in the front room that puts her hand up when we're ready to go to recess to ask this real question. You've messed up more good moments for people like us than I can imagine.
But I do notice that after recess and after school, it wasn't the Carol Jean Grunyard you sought out when you needed somebody to help write your paper.
That's right.
And to give you the answers on your tests.
That's right.
If you wanted the real stuff.
How did you know that?
That's called balance. You're not the first serpent in the garden.
Anyway, as I said, y'all, from the beginning, apples have gotten a very bad rap because they have been associated with love and pleasure and sensuality, temptation. But in all honesty, it is a tempting fruit. You know, the romantic implications that's associated with the apple. One of the reasons, I guess, why apple became the dessert at the end of the meal, mm-hmm. the sweet, mm-hmm. the finish at the end of the meal. Good for digestion idea. It was thought to be, by the way, an aphrodisiac.
It was
good.
Kind of a transition.
Transitional aphrodisiac, as you claim, for further pleasure. Is there any wonder why apples became the most sought-after fruit, y'all, on Earth and became significant plantings in the pleasure gardens of the wealthy aristocrats and the great chateau owners of Europe? Any reason to believe that they wouldn't have planted more apple trees than anything else, huh?
Of course not. You know, apples have been around for a while.
Yeah.
They originated in the Tian Shan Mountains of eastern Kazakhstan.
They're Kazakhstan, yeah.
They spread quickly, as you can well imagine. I mean, one bite and you want another. Huh. They spread through the then civilized world, as most things did, through trade, through military expeditions. And they have actually found apple remains in excavations at Jericho in the Jordan Valley. And from around 2500 BC, we find dried apple slices on saucers in the tomb of a queen at Ur in southern Iran. Mm. Don't you love that?
Well, I love all archaeological digs, even in Mesopotamian tablets. Mm-hmm. And I know when you do research on our big books, I mean, you're always bringing these little finds to us. And I remember talking about the Mesopotamian tablets around 1500 BC that recorded the sale of an apple orchard for 3 prize sheep. I'd have done that, right? Look, I'd have traded 4 sheep for an apple orchard. Now, you say that Homer always wrote about food.
Well, you know, isn't that amazing that food always did enter into his commentary? He wrote 12 pear trees bowing their pendant load and 10 that red with blushing apples glowed.
Somebody wrote that about me once.
Is that right? Yes. The pear or the apple part?
Well, you know, the renowned Roman poet, and everything goes back to Greece and Rome when it comes to
or
food.
Donaldsonville.
Or Donaldsonville. Donaldsonville does have play a part
all
in world history.
All roads lead to Donaldsonville.
it does, right over the railroad track right there. It does. But Horace, the Roman poet, noted in 100 B.C. that Italy had become a virtual fruit orchard with the perfect meal beginning with eggs and ending with apples. In fact, Italy has always been known as the Garden of Europe. And as the Roman Empire expanded westward, naturally so did all of the fruit, so did all of the grapes, so did all of the dates, so did everything else. Follow the Romans as they continued to bring their skills of cultivating all of this around the world. They transported apples to the far reaches of the Roman Empire, including all of present-day Europe, the British Isles. In fact, when we were in England, we saw the Roman ruins over there. You can imagine that they had apple trees and all of their arches. You can imagine that they would have arches. Even some of their gods were named in honor of apples.
Pomona.
Yeah.
you know, Cicero, the author, the statesman, the philosopher.
He was a great hog cooker, by the way, Cicero. he did Cochon de Laies, absolutely. Cicero, one of the great recipes I have for roasting a pig came from Cicero.
That explains why he encouraged all of his countrymen to save their apple seeds after dessert and plant them so he could put that little apple in the pig's mouth.
And what is the number one fruit associated with pork? Applesauce. Pork and applesauce. Pork roast with shingles of apple slices around there. Shingles, yeah. That's from Cicero's writings. He said, I placed a fatted pig upon the coals. What other food need man?
Are you sure it was Cicero?
I think it was. Sounded like him.
Maybe it was Pliny the Elder.
Oh, it could have been Pliny.
He was all about apples. He was identifying them, though. 20 varieties.
Anyway, y'all, needless to say, we are talking about the fruit of love.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about apples.
Oh.
We're talking about apples. We're talking about orchards. We're talking about recipes for apples. We're talking about the fact that Louisiana currently has great apple orchards growing, even though they may only be one or two trees.
Orchard.
So when we come back, y'all, we are talking apples. We have a great, great guest. Michelle York will produce a great book. We are going to talk about our beautiful Facebook page, right?
Absolutely. Facebook.com/stirringitupradio.
S-T-I-R-R-I-N, huh?
That's right. You know, Slama, as you said, lovingly
called him Slama. I call him Slama.
You call him Slama.
Now, you don't mind if I call you Slama.
Slama. It goes either way.
Slam man, I call. That's his radio face, the slam man. Huh?
He's all over Facebook now. He's in charge of the social media aspect of Stirring It Up.
Facebook.com, y'all.
Facebook.com, y'all. That's what I love about it. And plus, he, like I, we're both appreciative of the green movement. We'll see you back here in just a moment, especially green delicious apples.
He lived by the apple orchard in this little old orchard shack. His real name was Jackson Taylor, but I called him Applejack. Now old Applejack was loved by everyone he ever knew. Applejack picked apples, but he picked the banjo too. Play a song for me, Applejack. Applejack, play a song for me, and I'll sing. Play a song for me, Applejack. Applejack, play a song, let your banjo ring. Now I go down almost every day. We'd sit and we'd drink Applejack that old Applejack had made. Then he'd take his banjo down. Then he'd ask me if I'd sing. And he would play.
KRVS listeners become contributors when they recognize that they listen to KRVS as much as anything else on the radio or even more. The music on KRVS enriches their lives and they don't hear it anywhere else. They also know that their support keeps the station on the air. If these sound like good reasons to make your first contribution, please take a few minutes to call or give securely online at KRVS.org. And thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we have Reba Russell at the King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, Arkansas, and then we'll head to the Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival to catch a set from Will Tucker. That, plus our feature host, the late Jerry Wexler, will continue his feature host series On the Record. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Daddy Cecil here. For 2 hours of word sound power, Rasta Reggae Radio, it's Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m. Rebroadcast Saturday mornings 1 to 3 a.m. here on KRVS.
Well, he pulled a weed and he does the chore. He runs.
everybody. Welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And Michelle, and I need to take a small break here because I have to talk to my slam man over there because that song was a little slow. I much prefer Dolly Parton a minute ago. But, I mean, we're getting there. I'm going to just stop from time to time and bring you up on that. That one was a little slow. So, I mean, it was all right. But
so Dolly gets the thumbs up, yeah, but Dolly, Hank, not so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, 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 Hank. I mean, Hank was all right. That 1946 version, that was pretty good.
My mama used to call that cowboy music.
Cowboy music. Huh? Cowboy. And we're sitting here in the heart of Cajun country, Louisiana. We need a little fiddle and accordion, so to speak.
Fair enough.
Anyway, welcome back to the kitchen table, everybody. It's so nice to have you with us. And today we're talking about one of my favorite subjects and one of the favorite subjects of Pliny the Elder and Horace and Cicero. And all of the great thinkers like us. We're talking about apples because they have no fat, sodium, or cholesterol. And one medium apple is only 80 calories, Michelle, and has 5 grams of fiber. And if none of that mattered, they're delicious.
That's right. But you need to eat the peel.
Be sure to eat the peel because 2/3 of the fiber and all of the antioxidants that they just found out came from the peel.
That's it.
Nothing better than apple all surrounding my cochon de lait. Remember I was talking about my big pig roast a while ago?
Yes, indeed.
My pig roast surrounded by apples I just absolutely love. And the fact is I do grow 2 apple trees. Huh?
Well, I'm sure that takes care of all your cochon de lait.
Well, I pick my apples in June and July. Of course, our guest picks his apples probably now, right now.
That's right.
Because our temperatures are a little different.
I guess the apple harvest is kind of on the wane now. He's been busy, but we are lucky to have gotten the dirt guy.
Many people
call him the dirt guy.
That is my man, the dirt guy. I'm a dirt guy myself.
We got him in out of the orchard this morning to talk to us. Lynn Deerdorf.
I love that name.
Deerdorf?
Yeah. He's in the diamond business, too, right? Is that another name? I thought Dear Doctor.
Well, why don't you jot that down? We can ask him.
Go ahead. Let's talk to Lynn.
Lynn has lived in Minnesota for 60 years. Now, he retired, and I use the term very loosely, retired from the commercial real estate business, went in search of a little tract of land to expand his garden, and came back with a farm.
Lynn is my man.
We're going to have to ask about. That was one heck of a real estate agent, I think, that went for an acre and sold 80. Anyway, Lynn has been apple farming at his orchard, Deerdorf Orchards, in Waconia, Minnesota, since 1982.
Oh, wow.
30 years. He must have gotten bored somewhere around 2005 because he decided that he needed to grow grapes as well.
Oh, my God. He grows grapes?
That's right. He expanded his resume and he's established a partnership with an award-winning winery right on the farm. Now, I have to tell you, I see your wheels turning.
I know. Yes. I have 5 little rows of grapes and I grow apples and I'm in the South and everybody looks at me like I'm crazy because I try to grow a few grapes and apples, but I know it can happen.
So, we'll ask him about that too.
I'm going to ask Lynn about that.
I know you will. So, fresh in from the apple orchard, please welcome Lynn Deerdorf to Stirring It Up.
Deerdorf.
How are you, Jeff, this morning?
Lynn, did we wake you up yet this morning with all of our chatter?
Oh, no. Oh, no. We get up around 4:15 around here on a regular basis, so I'm about ready to go in for my morning nap.
A true farmer, you see.
That's a true farmer.
That's what my grandfather used to do, go into the cane fields at 3 and 4 in the morning, come in at 10 o'clock in the morning for his nap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brunch.
That's exactly right. So, Lynn, we're at a cool, crisp, I don't know, about 70, 75 degrees this morning, which is why we harvest sugar cane instead of apples.
So, we got down to, believe it or not, 24 degrees last night.
Oh my God.
The duck hunters are out. They're all bundled up.
Oh, I bet they are. Are you kidding me? The lakes of Minnesota, they have to be just out there going wild right now on ducks as we are in Louisiana in about another month.
Right. I think they start here and end up in Louisiana. In the meantime, they drop a few buckshots off in my house, so that's okay, too.
They do. And let me start off before Michelle jumps back in with a question. I love your state. I've been there many times. Of course, I went up to find the beginning of the Mississippi River since I have the end of it over here.
Wonderful.
And I love your state. And as a chef, I've visited with many, many great chefs all throughout Minnesota. So I just wanted to say thanks for being such great, hospitable, and wonderful people.
We are Minnesota nice up here. One of the things I do when I take kids around on the tractor to pick apples, I say, you got to help me drive the tractor, but you also have to wave. We are a waving state.
You are a waving state, Lynn. You sure are.
My wife has some roots down in Lafayette and Baton Rouge. She's got some cousins down there.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
She has family in Gulfport, Mississippi, where most of them are now, but there are still some in Loosedale.
Well, look, if they've started out in Lafayette, Louisiana, they got good blood, I'm going to tell you right now. And they are good cooks. Tell your wife they must be good cooks if they've started out in Lafayette.
I can vouch for that, yeah.
You know, Lynn, I was mentioning that somewhere in the early 80s, you and Bonnie and your family went out in search of a bigger garden, and you came home with a farm. So how did you go from a piece of land for a garden to the purchase of 80 acres plus? Because it came with a farmhouse, it came with the dairy barn. Tell us about
that. What happened basically is that I turned 40, adopted three more children, my wife and I did, and we decided that I had to get my hands in the dirt. So that kind of started the whole ball rolling, and from there it's been completely out of control.
Now, Lynn, did you come from a farming family? I mean, because I can't imagine that if you're going to order 150 Regent apple trees, you must have some experience with what end is the roots, you know?
I basically had none and made most of my progress through mistake.
You got your education out behind the barn, right?
Right.
So no experience at all. How did you begin then to say, okay, I have this commitment, and now I need to get myself together as a real estate agent. I'm becoming a farmer. Where was the beginning?
The beginning was basically the University of Minnesota, which is a land-grant college way back in 1880, I think, has a wonderful horticultural ag department, and their research breeding center is only about 5 miles from where our farm is. And all the apples and grapes and roses, you know, have to be bred specifically to handle minus 30, which is our zone 4 conditions in the middle of January.
Wow.
So without the university, we wouldn't be in either orchard or vineyard or winery work. University really is the starting point.
Well, the same thing here in Louisiana. I mean, we have Louisiana State University. That's an agricultural and mechanical college.
Right.
Anything we need to know, just as you have up in your area, is the access to these great, great universities that are there to help us. And being a businessman myself, I know how tough those early startup years can be. I've been all through it. And what about your sales? Where did you begin once you had apples to sell them? How did the commerce side begin?
Well, we basically went to the traditional route of farmers market, selling it pound by pound. And then eventually my wife, who basically was the catalyst for the apple orchard, she started a little stand, and we had something at the end of the road and the boat landing. So it just kind of went from there to there to there. And then we did a lot of wholesaling to public schools.
Wow. Okay. Well, that, wow.
Deliver bushels of apples to elementary schools at 5 o'clock in the morning. That was a lot of fun.
We all start out the same way, Lynn. You know, every great story begins with, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And then I did. That's really the success stories I tell. I have a culinary school at one of the local universities, and I have a couple of hundred students. And they all think, because I have a school named after me there, and I have my own enterprises, they all think you were born to succeed. You know, they don't realize that you get out there, it's trial and error, fall down, get up, figure it out, walk again. Right. What about the trial and error in the research in your business? How did you come to know what apples to grow, what varieties you would choose, what would go best there? How did all of that proceed?
Well, the world-class home run apple is Honeycrisp.
And love
that really jump-started the whole apple industry in Minnesota. Up till then, it was a little bit too local. There are over 10 million trees that give you a feel of how many trees are out there. And it was developed at the university once again. And its magic is that the apple cells are twice as large in Honeycrisp as in any other apple.
Wow.
So you have a very juicy, crunchy experience. The texture is just absolutely outstanding.
As cooks, we love that apple, too. I mean, as chefs, we really love it. Now, you know, in Louisiana, we're a fruit-growing environment, obviously. Apples aren't one of them, even though we do have a couple of orchards here. We grow the Anna, and we grow the Ian Shimmer, I think is the pronunciation, and kind of like that golden, delicious-style Israeli apple. And they tend to grow pretty well here. We don't need as much of those chilling hours. A couple days under 45 degrees will set our fruit, you know, on those two trees. And the trees tend, because of our high humidity here, our lot of rainfall, all the things that sometimes are detrimental to just the health issues of these trees, it's a little tough for us to grow them. What about in your area? Any challenges you have?
The challenge in zone 4 across the U.S., of course, is you've got to be sure you've got the tree that's planet can handle minus 30, because Granny Smith's and Kayla, all great apples, the top or the sign of the apple tree will simply not survive Minnesota weather. And then the other challenge, as well as with grapes, is that this year was the worst year in 40 years for apples across the United States, because we had such mild winter, and the bloom came out, and then we had late freeze, so that's a real dark cloud. And also another dark cloud, which we're going to avoid this year, is to have a very nice September, and then all of a sudden have minus 10. But we've had 3 days so far to where the temperature has been down around 25, 26. The trees are finally recognized it's time to go to sleep.
It's amazing how, I guess, nature in just a changing climate that everybody's talking about can actually be best seen, I think, in the orchards, in the fields, because the trees certainly are telling us what's happening with the climate. And you're seeing that change up there?
Right. We're seeing it in apples, but on a positive note, in growing cold, hardy grapes.
All right, Ryan.
He's all about talking to you about your grapes.
Now, the grapes are all, once again, bred or developed by the University of Minnesota to handle minus 30. The previous generation of grapes, believe it or not, you had to take off the trellis and bury them every fall.
Oh, my God.
Which is a little madness. You probably didn't know this, Shep. Minnesota is in the wine belt of the world.
You know, I didn't know that.
45 degrees is the wine belt around the world, and our farm is at 44 degrees, 54 minutes,
It is, but I do recognize that there's a huge wine and grape-growing industry throughout that belt, as you mentioned. So I figured that when Michelle was telling me that you grew grapes, interested me, and also that you had partnered with a winery. Is that right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Steve Zeller, who's a longtime friend, both he and his wife, Deb, who's an accomplished bronze sculpturalist, started winery about 6 years ago, and we're in our fourth year of production, and we will do 25,000 bottles, which is 2,000 cases this year, which is small by California standards, but...
But substantial, absolutely. Small, but substantial.
Out of work, and as you said, any new business, it's bottle by bottle is how we're getting marketed. So.
Now, what about the wine? What style of wine is it?
Well, we have about 8 different styles. They're all from Minnesota, once again, grapes. Our apples and vines, which is 80% Honeycrisp and Harrelson apples, along with 20% Chardonnay that we brought in from California just to get more of a apple taste. It's our leading seller, and then we do some serious reds.
Wow.
We were 27th winery 3 years ago, and now they're 41 wineries, so they're growing by leaps and bounds.
Wow.
It's amazing because even in Louisiana, we have a couple of great wineries as well that's now cropping up and doing some really award-winning wines as you are. Is your wines mainly dry or are they fruity wines?
Oh, we're not sweet winemakers. We're semi-dry makers, dry winemakers with some serious reds. There are some wineries in Minnesota, especially out in Hinterland, that have... Majority of their marketing is good sweet wines, but we're not into that venue.
In looking at your website, Lynn, we see that Deerdorf Orchards really is a great example of agritourism at work. I mean, you have a total farm experience there. Take us through your offerings, and especially, I mean, this must be the high season for you guys of hay rides and pick your own.
Well, let me give you a snapshot of this week real quick, all right? We had 432 kindergartners come out from Chaska School District. So we took them out on, gave them little bags. They picked their 5 apples. They got a demonstration of how to take them off the tree, and we took them out on a tractor ride to the field. Well supervised, of course. picked their apples, and they came back and had cider.
Oh.
Then we'll have the family experience, which is all co-mingled since we're open 6 days a week. Came out and they picked up our little red wagons, bought their pumpkins, and went out to pick apples and came back to the store and bought honey sticks and jam and jellies and the whole experience. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. I could see 400 kindergartens running around an apple orchard.
I know.
that had to be well supervised. I get nervous.
That was well supervised, right? But I saw a lot of smiles, so everybody was
I could believe that. I could really, really believe that.
And you have a cider press on the farm, is that right?
Right. It's just for show and demonstration, though, because as the chef knows, the unpasteurized cider caused lots of problems, particularly in New York State, I think.
Right, exactly.
Everybody's concerned that it gets properly pasteurized, so it's not a health issue.
This is obviously, and I'm going to say your time of year. I'm sure the rest of the month's a lot of hard work. The work changes, even though it's still hard or difficult this time of year. But this is the celebration time of year when we get into the Thanksgiving holidays, the fall, when everything starts to turn magic around getting toward Christmas. So does the farm change its look at this time where you're coming from the actual planting and pruning and harvesting to more of this socializing and entertainment side of the farm?
At this time of year, it goes strictly to taking care of the public and being sure that don't eat the apples off the ground and don't climb the trees and have a good experience.
Well, I want you to know that I'm kind of a tad of a winemaker myself, right, Michelle?
Oh, good.
Yes, you claim to be a winemaker.
You use that word mighty.
I'm just saying.
Claim, I see.
Lynn is a winemaker. You know what I'm saying?
Dabble is the right word, yeah.
I'm the dirt guy. I'm the grower. Mr. Zeller is the magic man who makes the juice into the magic wine.
Well, Lynn, in closing, I'm going to tell you that in the South, in Louisiana, the French brought a very interesting drink here in the 1700s, and it's called Ratifia. And Ratifia is a brandy-infused liqueur that is infused, obviously, with multiple fruit of any type. And I make Ratifias of all the wild fruit of Louisiana, the wild persimmons and blackberries or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. But right now, I'm making some large crocks. I'm talking about these big stone antique crocks, about 25 gallons, where I'm taking apples and burying those apples in about 5 gallons of French brandy and letting them sit for about 6 to 8 weeks to infuse not only color but flavor into the brandy. And then I'm finishing it with a formula of simple syrup and then bottling it to make this absolutely wonderful liqueur for the holidays that we call Ratifia. So I'm going to see if I can. No, I don't think it's against the law to send a liqueur across state lines if it's only one bottle. So I'm going to send you a bottle of my apple Ratifia to put on your Christmas table, okay?
Yep, and I will send you in turn, assuming it doesn't get interrupted at the border, a bottle of our port wine.
Michelle, you see how commerce begins?
I
cannot wait to taste your port, and I appreciate it so much. And Lynn, thanks for being with us today. I know it's a busy time of year.
I want to alert you to the new apple world-class coming down the line called Sweet Tango.
Oh, my God, Sweet Tango.
And you should go on the website, and you'll find everything, and it's not yet in Louisiana, but it will be next year for sure.
Well, I guarantee you we'll look it up. And since your wife has roots in Louisiana, give her a big hug for me, okay?
I will do that. I enjoyed the interview, and I enjoyed the accent.
Good. Lynn, thanks so much, and we really appreciate you being with us and sharing your expertise with us today on Starting It Up. So you have a good fall and a great holiday, okay?
All right. You have a good week.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Y'all, we're going to see you back here in a minute on the new Food and Culture Show.
Sure of you. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone.
Support for KRVS comes from the Black Pot Festival and Cook-Off, coming up Friday and Saturday, October 26th and 27th at Acadian Village in Lafayette. The Black Pot Festival features live music, local cuisine, and on-site camping. For more information, the website is blackpotfestival.com.
Hello, Georges Collinet here. Caught any great African music concerts this year? Well, whether you have or haven't, you can hear great music by African artists on tour in America. John Kanabe, Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, Kenan, Fatoumata Diawara, next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Coming up Friday afternoon at 1 on KRVS.
Why public radio? Because it brings you the kind of enlightened discussions about national and world events that keep you informed. Why KRVS? Because we bring you the innovative public radio programs you simply won't find on other stations, and all without commercial interruption. How can we do this? because we rely on listeners like you to help pay program and station expenses. That's why we're asking for your financial support. It's easy to give on our website at krvs.org or by calling. Thank you for your help.
Join KRVS and the Acadiana Center for the Arts for the premiere broadcast of the Louisiana Crossroads Music Series, coming up this Wednesday at 7 p.m. Wednesday's performance comes to us from the Central School Theater in Lake Charles, featuring Grammy Award-winning Beausoleil avec Michael Doucet. That's Louisiana Crossroads, live this Wednesday at 7 p.m. right here on KRVS.
I can't even get my breath thinking about how beautiful that song was. One day, Michelle, I might be coming right up to you like this, my arms out, saying, "Today is the apple picking day, baby."
Is that right?
Today is the apple picking day.
That sounded like one of those songs you probably dance to in the St. James Gin with your forehead stuck to your girlfriend.
That was my sock hop days. I mean, you know, Baskin Robbins got the idea of putting little ticket numbers when you walk in the store, you pick your number. That's the way the girls did it at St. James Gin. That's where it originated, right? Mm-hmm. There, where the girls would take a number to dance the sock hop with me.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I would have my white socks on, because in those days you wore white socks, and you slid over the gymnasium floor with a little sawdust, if you know what I mean. Although I didn't need it, my feet were about an inch off the floor as I danced and whirled the ladies to that song, by the way.
Your dance card was always full.
And the little, there was no air conditioning back then, so your forehead kind of sweat, the hair stuck together from the one face to the other. And sometimes that was a good thing, and other times it wasn't. But anyway, you took what you got in those days, so to speak. We were in the country.
Had to be careful of the apple.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show. How do you like this new line here, Food and Culture Show?
I like it.
Yeah, because that's what we do, right?
That's what we are. Food and culture.
And I want to thank Lynn Deardorff and Deardorff Orchards and Vineyards. I want to thank you for being here. And y'all, if you go to our website, www.jfalls.com, you can click on radio show, and everything's going to be right there. You have facts and figures. You can click on our recipes. You can also, you know, get all the good stuff, so to speak.
The goodies.
We used to also put the music on the show. We listed the songs that we played because people were so excited about the music. Mm-hmm. Anyway, y'all, we do put all of the information on jfalls.com, and just click on radio show and everything's going to be right there for you. And, of course, again, we want to thank Lynn for his great contribution to the show today. And Michelle, you and I were talking about a legendary character who actually exists. And a lot of times these characters don't exist. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Johnny Appleseed.
Absolutely.
His real name was Jonathan Chapman. He was born in 1774. He lived about 70 years. He was an American pioneer. He truly was a pioneer nurseryman, because he introduced apple trees to states like Pennsylvania and Indiana, Illinois.
I don't know where he got these seedlings from, but I always thought he just kind of walked across and planted a tree and kept walking and planted a tree. But he actually planted whole orchards fenced them in and then came back to check on them. It's kind of like a sharecrop.
It was exactly what it was. Every year or two, he'd come back and check on what was going on in his orchard. And he spread apples that way. Like you said, not dropping the seeds, but actually planting the little trees. And, you know, you could come in, buy a tree, put it on your farm, because it was a big part of homesteading.
I would just like to know, where did he get all of these seedlings from that he was carrying across the country? That's what always confused me about Johnny Appleseed. Not that I don't believe in the legend or the fact. And then he would come back, and whatever apples they sold or trees they sold, they would save half of the money for him, right?
That's right. He was very trusted. You know, he was a missionary as well.
I see. I didn't know that.
He was. He was a missionary, and he would stay in different people's homes, and he would read from the Bible. You know, one thing, they said how melodious his voice was and just very comforting for him to read. So he was kind of planting apple seeds and kind of an itinerant preacher, I guess.
Well, fantastic, because you never know a legend from fact, and here we just cleared it up, huh? You know, y'all, one of the things we like to do, and again, if you go to jfalls.com and you look at our facts and figures and all that, I say facts and figures, I'm just using that as a catch-all term.
Yeah, guess and goodies.
What I want you to do is go there, because even the books, we have a beautiful library here, and we always go into the library to see what resource material or what sources are there on the shelves that you should include in your library or your cookbook shelf, let's say, to make sure that you have all of the things that we have as we create our food here. So what are you recommending on a book today?
Well, actually, what I'm recommending today is a website, because the University of Illinois has a great section on apples, apples and more, everything you wanted to know. Apple history, apple legends, apple facts, apple varieties, nutrition, selections, how to preserve, different apple recipes, even an apple curriculum. It is a fantastic site. I do have it on the website. It's kind of an odd site address, but it's urbannext.illinois.edu/apples. So it's wow. it's kind of long, and that's why we've posted it. But if you Google University of Illinois apples, it'll come right up.
And that will all be on our website, jfalls.com. And what about Facebook? Did we get anything on Facebook this week? Did any of our listeners send something in? And we encourage, obviously, all of our listeners to tell us what you like, what kind of show you want to hear, what are you interested in, because we will create a show just for you. In fact, I'll even name it for them. If I like it enough, I'll name it for them. I'll say, like, this is the Slama show today. I don't know. I mean, I'll just use that as an example.
Looking at Facebook, it looks like a Chloe Jane commented in response to our post about turtle soup. She needs to check her turtle traps. So
that's a woman after my heart, a woman with her turtle traps. Huh? Absolutely, huh? Then, of course, you can go to facebook.com/stirringitup, and that's S-T-I-R-R-I-N, it up. Radio, and we're going to be right there for you, and we do want to hear from Michelle. Just a couple of great apple dates in history. You know, I like to do a little research on the side when I have some spare time.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
I'm very familiar with.
So you brought up the fact. You say that facetiously. Huh?
No.
I know what
I'm
you're
right
thinking.
There.
You're thinking sometimes I take history and fact loosely. I do more folklore, storytell, rather than stay clearly posted and intact with the historical fact.
But that's what makes you very interesting and entertaining.
Well, you mentioned the first apple, or the apple mentioned, not mentioned in the Bible, but associated with the Bible in the Garden of Eden. So certainly everybody knows that story, right? So,
right.
But I'd like to jump to 79 A.D. when Pliny the Elder, our good buddy, in his natural history writings described 20 varieties of apples that he loved. 20 varieties, that's Pliny. In 200 A.D., Galen and Hippocrates, you know, he's the doctor, right?
Yeah.
Every doctor has to take the Hippocratic oath. Mm-hmm. Right? And most cooks, too. We are hypocrites ourselves. He recommends that sweet apples with meals will aid digestion. Sour apples good only to cure fainting and constipation. That's right. And I always take that to whenever I faint, I jump for a sour apple. In fact, I feel a little faint right now talking about constipation. Give me one of those apples right there, huh?
Oh, my word.
1618, y'all, it was William Lawson of Yorkshire wrote A New Orchard and Garden, the first book in English primarily about apple growing. You know what happened in 1665? You and I were talking about it this morning.
Sir Isaac Newton,
my buddy Isaac. In fact, we name hurricanes after him. Absolutely. Sir Isaac Newton, he watched an apple fall to the ground in a straight line, and he wondered, why didn't that apple veer to the left or right? Why didn't it bounce a little bit?
No hurricane that day.
No hurricane. Why is that apple falling straight to the ground? Then he climbed the Leaning Tower of Pisa and did it again. And I've been to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and I did drop an apple from the top. You can do that for a dollar and a half. I did it myself. And he wondered why it fell, and it inspired him to discover gravity.
That's right. Laws of gravity.
That's right. I could go on and on and on. I could bore you to death with useless facts like this. But I think, you see, people are going to be talking about that today.
That's right. Well, that's like the apple a day keeps the doctor away.
That's exactly right. And eat an apple before going to bed will definitely make a doctor beg his bread. Okay, y'all, I want to talk about just a couple little things here because I have options on my apple recipes today. And, oh, and by the way, I do want to mention that. You know where Moraville is? Moraville. Have you ever heard that town's name in Louisiana?
I have. Isn't that around, like,
Bunkie?
Oh, that far up? Okay.
Yeah, that's a Bunkie area, Moraville.
Okay.
Moraville is where Carol's family come. Carol and Mary.
Oh, that's right.
From the Baton Rouge. You know Carol DeCody.
Of course I
well,
know Carol.
Her aunt, who was Aunt Dora... Mm-hmm. Dora Lise Fontaine wrote the state song, Give Me Louisiana. She was from Moraville, and she was a great cook. And in Moraville, it's kind of the pinpoint of the perfect zone for growing apples in Louisiana.
Now, where did you come up with that?
A little known fact, Zone 8 and 9, right there in that area, and Moraville's right in the middle. You think I don't do research for the big show? Huh? You don't think I can?
I need to verify that.
I'm telling you right now, huh? It falls right into the middle of the hardness zone of America, Zone 8 and 9. Moraville's right in the middle. That's how I knew how to grow my apples in Louisiana. That's why John Falls is one of the few successful apple growers in the state. Two trees.
Both trees.
Well, y'all, I had some choices. Michelle, do you want the sauteed apple calvados, which I think I'm going to do. I'm going to put a recipe for smothered pork sausage and apple cider on the website because people
love
and it's a great tailgating recipe mm-hmm. for the fall. It's a great holiday dish around Thanksgiving. It's perfect for the bonfires.
I'm putting that to the side. I'm making that.
The hunted apple rings. I love the hunted apple rings. They're just beautiful. The apple crisp were putting on the show from him.
Deerdorf Orchards.
But I'm going to give you the sauteed apple calvados. And the reason I'm doing this is because it is a perfect way to go into the store. Apples will be on sale everywhere before too long. And you can actually jar your apples or slice and can your apples, whatever, which I know you do often.
I do.
And I don't know why people don't do canning and jarring. It's so easy, y'all. You just kind of slice the apples, put them in a little pot and cook them with a little sugar. And then while they're still hot, you put them in a jar and put a nice lid on them. You put them in 190-degree water for about 20 minutes and just sit them in there. I mean, it's no sign.
And the day's gone before you know it.
And the day has just flown on by. And then you look at the clock and say, my God, where is the day gone, huh?
Right there in that jar of apples.
That's exactly right. But you know what?
No, I'm...
It is the perfect gift from the heart that you can give people for the holidays, and they need good gifts like that. Absolutely.
Well, good. See, I can write that. I'm making a notation.
You're making light. A slam man. She's making light of my heartful gift that I'm doing.
That's
right.
A great gift idea.
And fact is, every one of you will get one for Christmas this year. I am very proud. And don't go around bragging about it either, because people will be knocking on my door saying, where's mine? Y'all keep this to yourself.
I already got mine. Are you telling me that this is an early Christmas gift, or do I get another one?
You get another one, now, because you enjoyed it so much last year. The look on your face when I gave you that jar of apples was just indescribable. And I thought to myself, I have to give it to her again.
It was probably the same expression when you gave me the fruitcake for my birthday.
People long for my fruitcake. I can assure you of that. Very few people get my fruitcake. And when they do, I make them fruitcake aficionados. Anyway, y'all, the reason I am choosing the sauteed apple calvados because it is the perfect, easy dessert dish to top ice cream or pound cake or whatever for the holidays, and apples are in. And you can jar them, of course, but what I like about this is you can make them fresh. So what you're going to begin with is to take calvados. Now, calvados is an apple brandy. You know, Kirsch is a cherry brandy. Calvados is an apple brandy, and it's created with kind of the sauce of the apples, just like I do to Retifia, where I put all of that great infused flavor into brandy. Well, Calvados is like our buddy Lynn is doing up there. He's making wine and liqueurs with apples. And this dish, as I say, can be served. It's so versatile for the holidays because you can put it on top of ice cream. You can put it in our gratin dishes topped with puff pastry. There's a lot of things you can do with it. I love to just saute the apples hot in the Calvados and put it right on top of, as I say, a good vanilla ice cream, a good rich vanilla bean ice cream, or, like I say, pound cake, things like that.
But it's basically to top food.
Well, top food or to add to duck breast if you're grilling, or a nice piece of ham. Instead of doing ham with brown sugar, you do it with Calvados apples. And let me tell you how simple it is. You ready?
Yeah.
You're probably wondering yourself, if only I had the recipe to make this myself instead of waiting all year long for John to give me my Christmas present. I could make this dish all year long if I only had the recipe. Mm-hmm. Well, that the gift that keeps on giving right here. Okay, 1/4 cup of Calvados. You can get it at your local store. Just go to the liqueur section, and you're going to see Calvados. By the way, you can drink it as a little aperitif as well. You're going to have 4 Fuji apples, which is one of my absolute favorites. I love Fuji apples. In fact, the Fuji apple ratifia that I'm making right now, 20 pounds of Fuji apples went into it. 1 tablespoon of lemon juice. 1/4 cup butter. So, y'all, I'm going to preheat the oven to 350. I'm going to peel the apples, core them, and cut them into 1/8-inch slices. I'm going to submerge them in water with a little lemon juice. Michelle, you know why.
Keep
the apples from oxidizing and turning brown. You know that. I've taught you that already. How soon you forget. In a 10-inch skillet, y'all, you're going to melt that butter, that 1/4 cup of butter over medium-high heat. Do not brown it. You're going to drain the apples well. Just kind of shake that lemon juice water off of it and add it to the skillet with the butter and saute 3 to 5 minutes just until the apples begin to soften a little bit. I use a plastic fork test. Just kind of hit it with a plastic fork. If it goes through, you know they're tender enough, but not falling apart. Remove them from the heat. Cool slightly, and distribute an equal amount of those sautéed apples right there into the little gratin dishes. Michelle, as they start to sauté in the skillet, I want to remind you, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1/4 cup of apple cider, 1 ounce of kirsch, 1/8 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 pinch of clove, 1 pinch of ginger, 1 pinch of nutmeg, all going right on top of that beautiful sautéed apple in the butter, and it browns with all that beautiful brown sugar and apple cider melts in there, makes a beautiful sauce. And then you're going to take that and put it either into the gratin dish or over ice cream or over pound cake, whatever you're going to do. So all of that is very simple to do. All you have to do is cut your apples in advance, and when dessert comes around, you can just get up from the table and saute them nice and hot and put them over your favorite choice of dessert. Anyway, y'all, the recipe is on the website. This one only takes about 10 minutes to do. Just go to jfalls.com. It's all right there. Remember, facebook.com, Stirring It Up. And we were very happy to have you here at the old barn dance here, old soccer.
I'm going to unlock the door now.
You unlock the door and let them in. They're just sitting there. But whisper, say, we don't have Calvados here. We're just kidding you. Anyway, y'all, we'll see you next week. And be safe out there. And give everybody a hug, you see, and slip an apple in their pocket.
What are the issues in this election? The conflicts in the Middle East, the economy, global warming, the price of oil? No matter what the issues are, you can depend on public radio to cover them, not with sound bites, but with the detail that they deserve. Our reporters have their fingers on the political pulse of these United States and do their best to inform you on the issues that matter. This kind of reporting takes skill. We feel that the best reporters in the business work for public radio. KRVS is your source of great reporting on the issues. And since KRVS is supported by listeners, we're asking you to help today during our fall fundraiser with a contribution. Please call with your financial contribution or give securely at krvs.org.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Kleinpeter or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice, right here on KRBS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.